Neither does he obtain much satisfaction from a successful business deal produced in his imagination, when he is unable to use the money so made for. On the astral plane, things cannot be bought or sold. He can make thought forms of as many thousands of gold pieces as he likes, but what can he do with them? Nothing. He can be likened to a man who had been wrecked on a desert island, surrounded by treasures, invaluable to him could he transport them to a civilized country, but useless in a place where there are no buyers and nothing to be bought. The man on the desert island has one advantage over the man on the astral plane, inasmuch as there is always the possibility of his being rescued. He may be able to return to his country with his newly found wealth. The dead man has no such hope, for when he returns to this plane, he comes as a child without possessions other than the experience gained in his previous lives, experience stored by his higher self in the reservoir of knowledge which, as he gradually evolves, he is more and more able to bring down to the physical level. Similar dissatisfaction is experienced from his accustomed sports. In all probability, he played golf. He can still play golf if he wishes, in his new life, but he soon tires of this, for every shot he makes goes to the exact spot he has in mind at the moment of striking the ball. Every round played is a perfect round, never differing from the one before. Every putt is holed automatically, for he makes a thought form of what he wishes to do, and the fluidic astral matter immediately carries out, in form, the thought that his mind expressed. You can easily imagine how boring such a game would soon become and how different from the games played at the physical level, where one day he would play like a master and perhaps the next would be little better than a rabbit. The uncertainty was the charm of the game, and this no longer exists at the astral level. Consider the man who all his life has been taught that hellfire and eternal damnation are the portion of all who do not come up to the standard of perfection demanded. After death, the difficulty of ridding himself of such thoughts causes him to go through much misery. He is continually tortured by the thought that he is being fooled, although assured that such beliefs are untrue. Until he manages to discard them, he will be unable to settle down in the new life, where there is so much to be seen and to be learned. There are others who are miserable because, when they look back on their physical life from this higher level, they realize the number of opportunities they have wasted. This reacts on them in different ways. Some are filled with remorse, others, more sensible, make up their minds not to waste their opportunities next time. Again, we find a man who has been supporting a wife and a large family before his death. Probably he has not made adequate provisional for them and he worries how they will manage. This is a very natural thing, but unfortunately, it is a very foolish one too. Having laid down his physical body, he no longer has any further responsibility at the physical level. No worrying can bring practical help, and it reacts on those left behind in a way that makes them more depressed than they need be. He is adding to their troubles instead of lessening them, and a solution of the problem only comes about when he realizes that those he has left behind are separate egos, each working out his or her karma, and that probably this trouble they are passing through is an opportunity to pay off some of the bad karma which has to be worked off during this particular lifetime. There are people in this world who always make trouble for themselves by worrying about things over which they have no control, or by being pessimistic about the future, always feeling sure that the worst will happen. After death, such men are the same. They continue to feel depressed and to radiate depression wherever they go. Unfortunately, people with these depressing ideas continue to flock together as they did on the physical plane and still believe what they previously believed, although the lie is, as it were, before their eyes. Sooner or later, men of this type are made to realize their foolishness by those who are ever on the watch for opportunities to help such sad cases. The new teacher must then fill in the gaps he has made through taking away that which he condemned, by offering something more reasonable, more comforting, something which explains not only the present, but the past and future. Never spurn an idea because it is strange to you. Rather, listen to all sides of the question and draw your own conclusions. Your mind may temporarily become chaotic, but out of the chaos you may find light. the light which will set your feet upon the path that ultimately will lead you to knowledge, and onto the wisdom of the perfect man. Get rid of the idea of reward or punishment. There is no reward, no punishment, but there is result, there is cause and effect, and the law acts just as much in higher worlds as it acts down here on the physical plane. As we live now and as we are now, so shall we be on the other side of death, and our life there will be conditioned by the thoughts with which we have surrounded ourselves down here. So let us take an intelligent interest in higher things, science, art, music, literature and the beauties of nature, in fact anything which is not purely physical, and in the next world we shall have a happy life and be in a position to enjoy opportunities, which would be useless to us had we not prepared ourselves by our life here. Chapter 3. Yesterday I began to give you a brief outline of conditions as they exist on the astral plane, and I shall continue with this today. The theory of the Great Church of Rome, stated very roughly and briefly, is that after death the hopelessly wicked drop into an eternal hell immediately, whilst the very great saints go at once to heaven. The ordinary man, neither very good nor very bad, needs a long or short stay in an intermediate condition called purgatory, in which his faults are eliminated. As I have told you, there is no such thing as an eternal hell. There could not be. If for no other reason than that a finite cause can never produce an infinite result, and those who pass to the astral plane with the fear of this in their minds, go through a difficult beginning stage. There is a little more foundation for the statement about the very great saints, for there is a condition called the heaven world, and it is quite possible that a very few great saints glide rapidly through the intermediate world, the astral, and pass directly to the mental world there to continue their evolution. For the very large majority of people, the question of going to either heaven or hell does not arise. Their mode of progress is by passing through two conditions, the lower, of which is known as purgatory, and it is with purgatory that I wish to begin today. Apostrophe the Roman Catholic doctrine of purgatory as an intermediate condition, in which faults are eliminated by a rather painful process, symbolized by burning in fire, has a great deal of truth in it, but it is entirely deprived of its dignity by the ridiculous theory of indulgences, the suggestion that man can buy himself out of this inconvenient stage without learning the lessons for which that stage exists. There is of course no possibility of such a thing. No number of thousands of pounds could make the slightest difference to what happens to a man after death. Money may help him to circumvent the laws of the physical plane during his lifetime, but after he has left this world, money has lost its value, and such expenditure by friends and relations remaining in the world, so far as he personally is concerned, is wasted. It has always seemed to me a ridiculous thing to suggest that money can divert the law of nature. You cannot divert the law of gravity by offering it money, nor can you turn aside the law of divine justice by bribing it with candles, prayer and offerings. This purgatory, as it is called, not at all inaptly, because it is a state of consciousness where a great deal of refinement and improvement takes place, is in the lower planes of the astral world, that part into which man passed almost immediately after death. It is the region where a man is purged of the blinding lower desires, which would keep him indefinitely bound to his desire body. Evolution requires that he move on to higher regions. In order that he may do this, he passes through spheres where he is made to suffer in the same way that he has made other people suffer in his physical life, through dishonesty, cruelty and so on. Through time and suffering he learns the importance of honesty, justice, tolerance etc., and, having accomplished this, moves on. In his next incarnation, he will be born free from sin, although the tendency to succumb to the same desires is still there, and every evil act he commits in that life will be one of free will. A man will continue in this way until he has learned by bitter purgative experiences that he must practice tolerance and do good to others regardless of how he is treated in return. Certain eternal laws have been established, and we must try to understand them as such. If there were no laws of nature, we should soon be in a chaotic condition, with nothing on which we could depend, But there are laws of nature, and these laws are the expression of the divine will. I shall try to explain what happens in purgatory by giving you some examples. The example, which is always given, first, because it is the most easily comprehended, is the case of the man who has yielded, in excess, to the curse of drink, the drunkard. We all of us know what this drink curse can be. We know of so many cases where a man has wrecked his life, starved his wife and children, and even committed crimes innumerable, simply and solely to gratify his craving for the sensation that drink produces. If a man drank only to quench his thirst, then he would have no desire for drink after death, for thirst, like hunger, is unknown in the astral world, but the origin of the desire is not thirst, it is the craving for a certain pleasurable sensation. After death, the same craving which drove him in his lifetime to such terrible lengths, will be stronger than ever. But now that he has lost his physical body, there will be no possibility of satisfying it. Desire does not belong to the physical body only, or even principally, it belongs to and is one of the functions of the desire vehicle. The other names of the astral plane are the desire plane and the emotional plane, and in this plane desires and emotions are undiluted. The full force of a desire now deals at a man who, in his physical body, has only felt about 1/100th part of the strength of real desire. No one can deny that this is suffering, but also no one can say that the man is being punished. All that has happened is that the law of cause and effect has come into operation, and he is now reaping as he sowed. He is now feeling the result of his actions during his lifetime, but he is not being punished. He has set up in himself a desire, and so he suffers. The time during which the suffering lasts may well seem to him an eternity, though in reality it may be only a few days, a few weeks, or a few months. To a certain very limited extent he can gratify his desire in imagination. He can make thought forms of drink and imagine he is drinking. He can even imagine the taste of the liquid, but he cannot produce the result, the sensation for which he drank during his lifetime. The nearest that he can get to this sensation is to go to places where people are drinking and suck up, as it were, the fumes of the alcohol, which gives him a very limited amount of satisfaction. He does not get much, but it is something, and the best that he can get now that his physical body is no more. So here we have the case of a man who, if he related his experiences, would certainly say that he was thrown into hell indeed. Not eternal, of course, but quite long enough and sufficiently painful whilst it lasted, to make him think of that period as an eternity. The trouble is that no one can really help such a man, that is to say, in the sense of preventing this experience from happening. The only thing that can be done is to explain carefully to him what is happening and the reason for it all, and tell him that the only way out is to get rid of the desire, for until it has worked itself out or been got rid of, the suffering must continue. Sooner or later he realizes this, and so that stage of his purgatory ends. Next, take the case of a miser who hoards his gold on earth and secretes it so that he alone knows where it may be found. Think of the pleasure he derived, whilst living, from visiting the venue of his hoard and gathering up the gold pieces or notes, letting them slip from his fingers one by one, to fall again on the heap which he has made. Picture his crying out in his joy, all mine, and no one shall touch it but me. Then think what such a man's feelings would be when he saw from the astral level the hoard discovered, and probably spent recklessly by those who were fortunate enough to find it. He could do nothing, although doubtless he did hang round the hiding place for a considerable time after death. He may have tried to influence the searchers to go elsewhere. No doubt he did all in his power to put them off the scent, but he would know no method of communicating with them, except when they were asleep and temporarily at his level. In most cases they would remember nothing of such conversations and so be uninfluenced by his efforts. Once again, no one is punishing that man, nevertheless he is suffering from the uncontrolled emotions of covetousness, hunger, and greed. He must get away from purely physical things if he is to find happiness. Another very common case is that of the extremely jealous man who thinks he is in love with someone, whilst in reality all he wants is to possess that individual, body and soul, for his own personal gratification. Surely a man who really loved would be thankful to see the object of his love receive admiration and attention from others, but the jealous man is not. Having been jealous during his lifetime, he remains jealous after death, torturing himself indefinitely and uselessly by constantly watching the approaches of others to the object of his supposed love, hating those other people and trying in every way to influence them, but finding his efforts useless. No one is punishing such people for being jealous, they are simply reaping the results of their own foolishness through the uncontrollable operation of the law of karma, or the law of cause and effect. The only way that anyone can help them is by the intellectual method of giving them advice, trying to show them how foolishly they are acting, and by explaining to them that all that is required for them to obtain peace is that they should eliminate the selfishness from their love, and should realize that no one can own another's ego, body and soul. However much he may wish to do so, in quoted this as proof of how right he had been, that truthless treatment of a competitor was in reality a blessing in disguise. He thought no more about the incident during his lifetime. One other example and then I am finished with purgatory. A businessman once ruined one of his competitors and when criticized by some of his friends, said that harsh treatment was good in business, that he had learned the hard way and that the lesson would not be wasted on his competitor in the long run. Sure enough, after some years had elapsed, the broken man did rise again. In fact, he became a much more successful man than the one who had ruined him his early life. The ruthless man often quoted this as proof of how right he had been, that truthless treatment of a competitor was in reality a blessing in disguise. He thought no more about the incident during his lifetime. How different it all appeared when the whole story was shown to him in what is called purgatory. There he saw the little man after he was ruined, returned to his home where he told his wife of his misfortune. It was also shown how this man's son, who was starting his career at the university, had to give up that career and take the first job offered to him, that of a humble clerk. The father started again and, as I have said, in due time became a rich man, but that was too late to help the son. What of him? He was bitter at the trick fate had played on him, so instead of settling down in his new sphere of activity and making the best of it, he became mixed up with bad companions, tried to make money quickly by dishonest means and finally landed in prison, which broke his mother's heart and caused her death. The whole story, now seen in its full perspective, is a major tragedy, and you can easily imagine the suffering of the truthless businessman when he realized that the result of his greed, so thoughtless at the time, caused not only the temporary ruin of a small competitor, but also the death of one woman and the ruin of a young man's career. On the other side, we see the full and complete results of all our actions. Few of us do not suffer in the seeing and register a vow that in future we shall act differently. The change in outlook towards such things is what purgatory is meant to produce, and once our outlook is changed, our experiences in purgatory are at an end. By learning these lessons thoroughly, we can ensure that after future lives our passing through the lower part of the astral world will be little delayed by experiences similar to those I have related. We have to learn a lesson once, only, and if our characters change thereby, we avoid much trouble and temporary misery in the future. Just as the astral experiences of the average man and the man below average standard were in accordance with the types lives they have lived on earth, so those of the intellectual man, the man above the average, are also in accordance with his mode of living. Such men pass more quickly through the lower to the higher levels of the astral world, where they are not only able to continue any experimental work in which they were interested, but can gather students with similar tastes round them. Such gatherings are to be seen frequently: the scientists with his group of students, the mathematician with his smaller group. Both find the astral world a much more suitable plane in which to work than the physical world, Puffer-dimensional space can now be studied with opportunities of experimenting. The artist has his group of pupils trying to imitate his skill, as also does the musician, and now the latter is happy indeed, for he has the opportunity of listening not only to the world's music, but to the music of nature, from that of the sea and the wind, to the music of the spheres, for there is a music of the spheres, there is an ordered song as the planets move through their mighty curves in space. There is music and color connected with all the vast cosmic world, but as yet we understand the glory of the cosmic life as little as the crawling ant understands our life, with its many activities. A musician may meet the great angels of music, for there are angels who live for music, who express themselves in and by music, to whom music is what speech is to us. You will hear more about their activities later. For the spiritually minded man, the man who has meditated deeply on higher things, there waits an infinity of bliss. During his lifetime he has had to rely on faith and his own reasoning powers. Now he can prove the truth of many of the theories which he has studied in the world, and one can but faintly imagine the joy and peace that this knowledge will bring. To such a man, he has been struggling in darkness, and now, to a certain extent, he has found the light. The philanthropist who during his lifetime has had one thought, one object in view, the helping of his fellow men, has perhaps the greatest opportunity of all, for now he is free to devote the whole of his time to helping and comforting those who require his services. If he takes up the special work of helping those who have just passed over, he will find work for every minute of his astral life. During wartime the need for this work is great, for the ignorant are many and the helpers are few. Much good karma is then earned by those who have fitted themselves for such work and who seize this golden opportunity. Therefore I say to you, seek knowledge, not that you may help yourself alone, but that by this knowledge you may be able to assist your brother in distress, also that you may take your share in this great scheme of evolution and be, what every thinking man should be, a guide and a helper to the ignorant. Today brings me to one of the most pleasant parts of my description of the astral world, for I must now talk about children, and after all, do not children really make a world? It is only necessary to spend Christmas with a family that is without children to realize what a difference their happy voices and romping games make to this greatest of all festivals. Nothing seems the same, the house appears to be dead and the world empty of true happiness. Children's laughter is the most wonderful thing in the world, the one thing most missed by those who have worshipped at its shrine in the past, when they find that the time is gone by and that the revelers of the nursery have been submerged into the huge cauldron of adult humanity. It is as if children are the only really natural beings in the human world, the only people who understand enjoyment. The explanation of this lies in the fact that having so recently returned to Earth, they are as yet so near to the truly glorious life of the heaven world, that they still retain some touch with life at its highest, life that is one with the nature kingdom, the land of fairies, the land of beauties untold and undreamed of by the material beings we all seem to become, when we grow up and are tarred with the brush of convention and respectability. A condition analogous to this is to be seen in the animal kingdom. Even lion cubs are delightful as babies, when they are born. They have no fear, for they have just come from the astral world where fear does not exist for them. After some months, or even a year or so, their instinct, which is part of the group soul to which they belong, filters through. Then fear and antagonism for the human race comes into force, and no longer can they be considered as safe pets. It is usually considered that nothing is quite so sad as for a child to be cut off at any stage of its career, but especially at the time when it is emerging from babyhood into what is described as the interesting stage at about 3 years old. The period when a child ceases to be a child is not determined by age. Some lose their childish ways as soon as they enter school, others remain children till well into their teens. The death of a child must always seem unnecessary to those who have not grasped at least the elementary theory of evolution, for it is very natural that they should wonder why parents have to suffer in this way, And what the use is of a life which ends so soon after it has begun? Students of evolution, however, realize that a child is an individual who has descended to this physical plane to obtain experience, to work out its destiny. If it dies young, it gains little experience and it will not take long to assimilate this after leaving the physical world. Thus it is more likely that the child who has died young will be the sooner back to live another life. It does not follow that it would lose anything or suffer in any way from this early death. If the average person would only take the little trouble necessary to gain this knowledge, how much happier the world would be. When a baby is about to pass to the next world, the ceremony of baptism should always be performed. This rite makes the child a member of a holy brotherhood, surrounds it with a certain definite protection and starts it along a certain line of vibrations and influences, which prevent harm from coming near it. When children reach the astral world, they have a wonderfully happy life, because of the absence of restrictions. They never lack attention, for there are always numbers of mothers that have passed over who are willing and eager to care for a child that has died when a baby. They have the same maternal feelings when living at the astral level as they had when living in the physical world. Poverty, lack of food, and suffering from cold, such things have no place in the thoughts of the astral mother. Sleep is no longer a necessity, so there is plenty of time to give to any child she adopts. Apart from the pleasure of seeing that it is cared for and amused, she can commence the child's education, introducing it to the beauties of this world in their many forms. Such teaching may leave its mark on the child and may cause it to turn the artistic side of life in its next incarnation. As well as foster mothers, who are always available, there is a vast army of astral helpers also ready to pilot a newcomer through the early stages of his new life. Like the adult, the child is unchanged by passing to this new world. There are always many who are only too anxious to help him at his games, and there are also the nature spirits, who play a great part in children's games on the astral plane. Think of the imaginative child surrounding himself, still in imagination, with the wonders of the kingdoms described in his fairy books. In this astral world, the child will not have to rely on make-believe. Once a thing is imagined, it is the plane for him to see, for the matter of the astral world is molded by thought, and just as long as the child imagines a thing, so will the thing be there. Instead of sitting in an old washtub with a pair of walking sticks for oars, the child who wants to row on the river has only to think of the river, only to imagine the boat and the oars, and they are there for his use. The child who loves to imitate the heroes of fiction has only to think strongly of himself as the hero, and he immediately becomes his idea of what that character should be. The plastic astral body is molded into that very shape, and so for the time being, the child absolutely becomes what he is trying to imagine. He becomes Hermes with the winged shoes, or Jason in charge of the Argo, or Robin Hood, the hero of Sherwood Forest. Whatever he thinks of, he becomes, and when he gets tired of that impersonation, he has only to think of someone else, and the plastic astral body obeys his commands. It is a wonderful education for a child, this living amongst the characters of his imagination, since he learns much by this method that would be impossible under physical plane conditions. We all know the child who is continually asking questions. How often have we found ourselves up against a stumbling block, because it is impossible to give an answer that may be understood by the listener who has only a child's undeveloped brain and elementary intellect? Sometimes we even go so far as to scold the child and try to discourage him from questioning. We do not want to hinder his progress, we just feel that now and again our answers are so inadequate that it would be better for the question to remain unanswered rather than to give a wrong impression. When the astral plane conditions can be made use of, all is changed. He can be shown the answer to his question by making an image to float before his eyes. A living model, for it is living so long as our thought is concentrated upon it, is a great improvement on a wordy discourse. It may be asked, do the children not miss their fathers and mothers, friends and playmates? No, they do not, and for this reason. Everyone when asleep spends these hours in the same world as the child who is dead. The fathers and mothers who mourn because they think they have lost a child, find that the same child is visible to them again the moment they sleep and are out of their physical bodies. They are able to talk to the child and he to them, to play with him, to continue his education and so on. They are able, practically, to carry on from where they left off on earth, but the pity of it is that these self-same parents remember nothing about this when they wake up in the morning.